Good afternoon. I'm Chairman Brad Holton. I'll bring the meeting to order. We have a 1:30 agenda item this afternoon, meeting to discuss open meeting law inquiries with P.A. Taylor. I see that P.A. Taylor has chosen not to be present. There is a member of his civil department that's in the gallery. So with that, I'm disappointed. P.A. Taylor chose to draft a letter, and he chose to use the word I multiple times. And as of to date, he has elected not to advise the board who gave him the information that he submitted the proposed violation to. I'm frustrated that on Monday, this board was schooled by P.A. Taylor and also Alex, one of his members of his office, that this was not an investigation. If you're confused by what I'm saying, you could listen to the audio for Monday. It's clear in the allegations sent up to the Bonner County Attorney, P.A., that reference special prosecutor to investigate, special prosecutor to investigate. So I, if only on that issue alone, that there isn't a clear cause for this board to seek outside counsel, that would be one glaring anomaly. But there's several others. So I'm not here to further a dysfunctionality between P.A. Taylor's statutory responsibility to be the legal counsel to this board and setting himself apart as adversarial. And I get all of the things that he chooses to hide behind, but at the beginning and at the end of the day, statutorily, he or his deputies have a fiduciary responsibility first to this board and not some phantom complainant. And I can see now some of the history of the county through these actions, and it disappoints me greatly. I understand that I'm an elected official, and if you can't stand the heat, get out of the fire. But there's protocols. It's quite obvious to me why ICRAMP had to drop us. It's quite obvious to me that is if this is the mode of operandi, we need to do everything that we can. This board, both Commissioner Brooks and myself, ran with the commitment to keep us, A, out of the newspapers about embarrassing issues and to quit getting sued. It's a team effort. It isn't just the board that gets you to that place. But what P.A. Taylor attempted to look into without consulting us or trying to work with this board or educate this board was to throw out and invalidate everything that the appointed clerk would have done up to some point today. Do you think that might have caused a little harm to the county? By golly, it would have. And instead of looking out for the best interest of the county, he was off on some yet-to-be-substantiated allegation. I'm a little bit frustrated with that. What I would like to see today, and I believe we could get there, is a better and more constructive relationship between legal counsel and this board. I know it's a novel idea, but it can happen, and it does happen in other counties. But for this past week, it's been frustratingly adversarial. We have two choices. Does the other two commissioners want to speak at the beginning, or would we like to hand this over to our counsel, David Leroy?
Chairman?
Yes.
I have comments that I would like to make, but I think I would like to hear from our legal counsel first.
Yeah, I'm good with that, Mr. Chairman.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Leroy. I really appreciate you taking on this singular task for us, and I look forward to what you have to share.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, counselor, your angst is, of course, noted and your comments recognized, but I do, in the same spirit that you have wished for a better and more constructive working relationship, hope that the task I've undertaken by a special assignment of the board per your resolution, which also called for the possibility of suggested better working relationship protocols, can be useful in achieving the goal that you've identified as between the two offices. Now, what I've prepared for you, as you can see, is a five-page written memorandum structured with a statement of facts where I reviewed documents from the record, a letter that the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office sent with exhibits, a letter the Monter County Prosecutor sent back, and additional materials that I sought on my own. In preparing this memoranda, I've communicated with the Idaho Attorney General's Office and reviewed the Idaho Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual. I have reviewed the Code of Professional Responsibility for Lawyers and conversed with Bar Counsel for the Idaho State Bar. I've conversed with another significant major county prosecutor's office, the Civil Division there, as to their working relationship in circumstances like or similar to the one that developed here. And I've also drawn on my own experience as a former county prosecutor for two terms, although in a far different era predating the open meeting law, as well as my experience as Idaho Attorney General, during which time, under the statutes as they then existed, it was my duty to supervise 44 county prosecutors for a four-year term. In that regard, I structured my remarks in the form of a statement of facts, which I'll review very briefly, block by block, but without drilling down into the details contained therein, unless either you or the prosecutor's office representative wishes me to explain with more particularity what I have observed or found there.
So for the people that will be listening to the audio record, these documents will be attached PDFs down below the agendized item. So you won't be in the dark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I began by suggesting that by resolution adopted by the board, you've engaged me to review, analyze, and report upon the following issue. My statement of facts, then, in the document posted, precedes the next three pages, and it begins with the predicate outlined or hinted at by you, Mr. Chairman, that On or about April the 3rd, the Canyon County prosecutors learned from a third party, out of county source, that a complaint had been made about the process that you engaged in on or about February 2nd to appoint a new county clerk. The surprise and concern that you felt was in learning from that third party out of county source that the Bonner County prosecutor had independently investigated allegations related to the open meeting law violations surrounding your clerk's appointment and had written a several page report on the matter. I am advised and upon information and belief understand that the commission had no knowledge of this entire procedure prior to that from any source inside the county or other than that one that was discovered on or about April the 3rd. In my next paragraph, I discuss a copy of the Canyon County prosecutor's office letter, which we obtained from Bonner County prosecutor, which was a 5-page letter that the Canyon County prosecutor sent to Bonner County on or about February 28th, which identified that Mr. Marshall was requested to be or accept an appointment as a special prosecutor, and that indicated that on behalf of the office on facts available to it, violations of the 48-hour notice and improper delivery meeting provisions of the Idaho meeting law had tainted potentially the appointment of Rick Hokeblum to the vacancy of the post of the clerk. Approximately a week before you learned of the existence of this exchange of correspondence on March 29th, my next paragraph indicates the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office had received from Prosecutor Marshall a nearly identical in its entirety 5-page letter back from the Bonner County Prosecutor, which had essentially merely repeated in verbatim over the first 3 pages the 12-point statement of factual findings that were sent to him from Caldwell on February 28th. It was apparent from that set of factual findings that no outreach had been made to the Canyon County Commissioner's Office or other independent fact finding had been done. That was succeeded in the letter by an analysis section authored by Mr. Marshall. Yet for a page and a half, that analysis merely repeated the initial offering from the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office, including the comment, now on behalf of Mr. Marshall, I find the Canyon County prosecutors violated the open meeting law. Only the last 6 sentences of that analysis were unique to Mr. Marshall. And I don't know that I necessarily need to read that into the record. I'm prepared to do so if you wish me to do so, Mr. Chairman. But in that 6 sentences, based on the facts that were sent to him, the analysis that was delivered to him, in my opinion, Mr. Marshall, though an experienced and well-meaning prosecutor attempting to assist the county in this matter, reached the wrong legal conclusion, and I'll explore that more later when I go over my recommendations and findings, and was misinformed as to 3 critical facts. First of all, he did not know that this board had been given contrary advice with regard to it being permissible for each and all 3 of you to go to in an official capacity of precinct committee person to the Republican Central Committee meeting, at which the possibility of nominating various individuals to the vacant position of clerk was undertaken. The commission had prudently asked the prosecutor's office for that, although again, I have advice about asking for advice that I'll cover in a moment. But without knowing that the prosecutor's office in Canyon County had given advice that attendance at such a meeting was given to the commissioners, the prosecutor in Bonner County, in my opinion, was substantially led to a wrong legal conclusion. He also found that the commission likely had engaged in an executive session, and there was no such executive session had. And a fair reading of his six sentences suggests that this commission had a deliberation about the appointment of the clerk at the Republican Party Central Committee meeting, which is also factually inaccurate. Thus, the wrong legal conclusion was reached by the analysis. He did not know that the commission had received advice about attending. He did not know that no executive session was held there or anywhere else to appoint the clerk. And he did not know that there was no deliberation by the commission at the Republican County, Republican Central Committee meeting. Mr. Marshall then proceeds on to a remedy section, wherein he concludes that due to the passage of time, the appointment action is rendered final and not assailable. And he also concludes, quote, that there is not enough evidence, end quote, to indicate that the commissioners, quote, acted contrary to legal advice or committed a knowing violation of the open meeting law. He certainly reached the right conclusion about not acting contrary to legal advice. Yet again, he didn't know that in some particulars, legal advice was given. My third paragraph confirms that on Friday, February 2nd, the board did indeed take up an agenda item that considered in open session the replacement of the clerk, and that such a appointment was made from the list of three persons submitted by the Republican Party to allow the commission to appoint Mr. Hogeboom, who was on that list. My fourth paragraph discusses that issue that was collateral to the meeting. There was some concern raised in the dialogue between the two prosecutors about 48-hour notice and whether such agenda notice was properly given. Again, a matter that would have been relatively easy to investigate. It was easy for me to inquire of your chief operating officer and to obtain documents confirming that roughly 70 hours before the meeting was scheduled, such a notice of a generic proposition that you would be considering on February 2nd was indeed posted on the board's agenda item for public consumption. My fifth paragraph talks about the fact that you did indeed get prior legal advice orally on or about January 31st from a member of the prosecutor's office in response to the specific question of whether Commissioners Holton and Brooks could attend, being two commissioners in the same room at the Republican Party Central Committee meeting in their capacity as Republican committeemen without triggering a violation of open meeting law issues.
Mr. Leroy, may I ask for clarification on paragraph 5?
Sure.
So in the third line, there's a quotation mark in front of the word commissioners, and then it continues, since Mr. Holton and Mr. Brooks. And I don't see an end. I'm missing the word, quotation mark, sorry. So I'm wondering what the source is for that information, what you're quoting. All the way through the question, the claim that they asked for advice about the open meeting law.
I believe the quotation should end after the word commissioners.
Okay.
Indicating solely that I was emphasizing the word commissioners rather than something subsequent to that.
As opposed to committeeman, is that what you're getting at?
Correct.
Okay.
So this portion says
the board sought the informal oral advice of a Canyon County deputy prosecutor
as to whether their individual but simultaneously and collective attendance at a non-board meeting for the Republican Party purpose would violate the provisions of the open meeting law. That's not quoting something directly. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, you do.
Okay, and just so the record is clear, my understanding is that that was not the question that was posed to our office. It was whether the commissioners could attend as committee men, even though they were later going to be deciding on the issue as commissioners.
Right, and my understanding of that oral advice confirmed in part by an email received back by the commissioners from the individual in your office that gave that advice was that if the commissioners plan to attend as in their individual capacities simultaneously and collectively at a non-board meeting for a Republican Party purpose, that would not violate the provisions of the open meeting law.
That question was about the open meeting law, though. That's my point, is that it was a separate issue that was raised.
So just a point. I appreciate you trying to get a clarification for the record, but us three were here, and what's been represented verbally in Council Leroy's writing is factually correct.
Is the board's understanding of what happened? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I just want to make clear that legal is not in agreement with that understanding.
Well,
disagree, that's fine. I just want to make sure that the record doesn't imply that legal is...
Mr. Chairman, as the individual that sat in this very chair that I'm sitting at and directed the question at Chief Erickson, do you have a problem with Commissioner Holton and myself attending the Central Committee meeting tomorrow night as precinct committeemen, since we are elected as PCs? Do you have a problem with that?
Right.
Correct.
So your understanding was that you were asking under the umbrella of open meeting law. I don't believe that was Chief Erickson's understanding.
That would be incorrect based upon the response that we received from Chief Erickson saying no, he did not have a problem, and then further explaining why he didn't have a problem in the separation between being a commissioner and being an elected precinct committeeman.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on what the underlying issue was.
Were you here that day?
I don't recall. Okay. I believe, though, that Chief Erickson sent an email maybe to Greg Rast yesterday. I don't know if the board was on it, and that further explained his understanding of what occurred. Maybe Commissioner Van Beek had that. I think that was an email exchange with you, if I recall.
And Chairman, thank you. I want our legal counsel to finish.
Let me intercede. So, Madam, are you saying that your office did not give the advice to these three commissioners that they could attend the Republican Central Committee meeting all together at the same time? Are you saying that advice was not given?
My understanding of the conversation that took place, or at least, let me say, my understanding of legal's understanding, and it sounds like the board had a different picture in mind of what they were saying, that your motivation was, we want to make sure we're not violating the open meeting law, but I don't think that was clearly communicated. And so the answer was, you can act both as a chairman, or sorry, as a committee man, and then 2 days later you can act as a commissioner, a county commissioner, and that's okay to wear both of those hats. So I don't think there was a clear discussion about open meeting agendizing what needed to be put on the record later. So I just want to make sure that everyone understands, who's listening later, that legal is not concurring with the board's understanding of what that conversation was. So there's actual issues really.
Mr. Chairman, why don't I read into the record a portion of the email from Mr. Erickson sent on April 11th, 2024 at 5:01 p.m. to Greg Rast, your chief operating officer, also copied to Commissioner Van Beek, also copied to Monica Reeves. There had been a set of dialogue, and I can go back and read that in, wherein Mr. Erickson was challenged to recollect that he had discussed this issue as the commission had recollected it. And he replies in that email, second paragraph, the context of my statement was that I didn't see a conflict for Commissioners Holton and Brooks to attend the committee meeting in their roles as members of the Central Committee. I believed and still believe that they can separate their roles as member of the committee that nominated the three candidates from their role as commissioners who had a statutory duty to make the final decision on filling the vacant clerk position. I don't have a problem with Commissioners Holton and Brooks attending the committee meeting in their individual capacities as committee members. Is that the position of your office?
As to the question of whether they can fill both those roles, I believe Chief Erickson said that he still believes that to be the case.
Well,
I'm saying there's two separate
into
issues
the record.
There. Right. I'm saying there's two separate issues. So, and I'm not trying to get into a back and forth. You're expensive and we're, you know, here paying you, I believe, out of county funds. So I just want to make sure that there's a clear record that the prosecutor's office is not necessarily agreeing with anything that you have in your statement here. We're not necessarily agreeing that it's appropriate for this to be reviewed by outside legal counsel. We made that clear in an email. I don't think that was clear on the record on Wednesday when the board adopted that resolution. So just know that there is some disagreement here. I'm not here to hash it out today. I just don't want there to be an appearance that the prosecutor's office is in concurrence with everything that's going on today.
Well, why don't you put on the record to what extent you disagree with the paragraph I just read into the record?
I didn't say that I disagree with it. I said we have two different issues.
Thank you. And I believe that my summary in page 5, or paragraph 5, page 2, in which the prosecutor's office was consulted by the commission, all three commissioners, and advice was given that it was not a violation of the open meeting statutes of the state of Idaho for the commissioners to attend the Republican committee meeting is a fair summary of what Mr. Erickson said on or about January 31, and exactly what he has said in the email, which I have just read into the record, subsequently confirming his advice.
Can I break in? For the public, this is a clear indication of the conflict within the PA's office that required this board to seek outside counsel. It's just been illuminated before you. Go on.
Continuing, Mr. Chairman and Commission. Significantly, Ms. Van Beek also indicated that she planned to attend. Her attendance was in a different capacity, as she was not a precinct committee person, though her husband was. She simply attended in her capacity as an interested citizen, and I believe made that clear as to her intent as well, before, during, and subsequent to the meeting. My next observation at the top of page 3 is, in fact, that appears to be correct advice by Mr. Erickson, delivered orally and delivered by the Kenyon County Prosecutor's Office. In fact, the Idaho Attorney General's Office, again, with whom I consulted, and as to the written document, the Idaho Attorney General's open meeting law, which I reference at the top of page 3, concurs that county commissioners are not prohibited from having contacts with each other outside of a duly organized open county meeting, and that the Office of the Attorney General does not believe the open meeting law was intended to act as a bar to all interaction between individual county commissioners. Those comments appear in a question and an answer format, and the question was essentially, is it wrong for two county commissioners to get together, constituting a quorum when they are in a capacity as something other than county commissioners? The Attorney General's answer was no, just as the Kenyon County Prosecutor's Office instructed you correctly, in my opinion, was the case at the Republican County Central Committee meeting. My point number 6 addresses the Prosecutor's Office concerns articulated in the letters back and forth between the prosecutor's offices and, I believe, expressed to the commission subsequent to the February 2 meeting by Chief Deputy Erickson, wherein the county prosecutor's office became concerned with certain comments made and the brevity of the meeting on February 2nd. I've addressed those in paragraph 6, and I suggest that though there was an initial consultation on or about perhaps February 3rd, that the transcript of that meeting had difficult or problematic comments in it. The concern, though communicated to the commissioner's office, was never followed up by any mutual effort to communicate or clarify the facts discussed in that transaction until it was referenced and encoded into a complaint letter to the Bonneville County Prosecutor's Office 26 days later. My seventh paragraph reemphasizes that the problem to a great extent herein was that the Bowerda County Commissioners and its chief operating officer were utterly surprised by this entire dialogue, as apparently was a portion of the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office, having no notice of the existence of this exchange of correspondence between the prosecutor's office and Bonner County and Bonner County's reply back, but never at any time during the preparation of those letters and the exchange of letters and the nearly 1 month that it was pending before the Bonner County prosecutor, was there any query of the commissioner's office about the 48-hour agenda issue, whether or not legal advice had been obtained from the Canyon County prosecutor's office, or addressing the content of Ms. Van Beek's remarks or the brevity of the meeting that was had on February 2nd. Eighth, I note that the prosecutor's office has advised, and it's appreciated, I'm sure, that after the receipt of the Bonner County letter, that it considers the matter closed and of no further legal significance. But finally, I suggest in my paragraph 9 that this ought to be an instructive episode for both offices, where the experience for the county commissioners has been to raise a concern about the nature and extent of their confidential and vital attorney-client relationship with the prosecutor's office, and drawing upon my experience and the outside contacts that I've made in terms of best and current practices when these kinds of issues come up, I've suggested in the following two pages, a series of protocols that I think would be useful for the commission and the prosecutor's office in this county to adopt in working through and avoiding similar difficulties in the future. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'll go through those.
Sure.
On the bottom of page 3, I note A, that of course the board must remain fully informed and very sensitive of its duty and obligation under the open meeting law and the requirements of the 48-hour agenda. And I note that in my interactions with you, not only have the commission been sensitive to that, but most particularly, you've charged your chief operating officer to be particularly focused on all of those requirements of the open meeting law. And I would have every expectation that this episode has only emphasized the board's commitment to compliance with that, and the chief operating officer's sensitivity in his duties to do exactly what was done in this regard, particularly with regard to the 48-hour notice, although it was never properly inquired about before being complained about. B under that, I notice and state that the prosecutor's office does have, as the prosecutor has noted and properly relied, a mandatory duty to refer certain alleged violations of the open meeting law to outside special prosecutors. It's done all over the county, all over the state. It's done in all 44 counties. Some prosecutors have a very slow fuse on referring those things and thoroughly explore them with their county officials in any particular, whatever may have been violated. and some are very risk adverse and refer them very quickly to outside counsel. There's no absolute right rule for when that is or should be done. However, in paragraph C, I suggest a test which needs to be followed before any prosecutor, regardless of the length of their fuse, refers these things to outside counsel. And that is the same statute that makes a mandatory referral duty also states that the prosecutor is required to have reason to believe that a violation of the provisions has been committed. Reason to believe, in my opinion, is something like probable cause, which we look for every day in this courthouse in criminal cases. If a complaint comes in that is on its face, patently absurd, there's no mandatory duty to refer that to an outside special prosecutor. If there are certain facts, was 48-hour notice given? Was legal counsel sought and obtained? Did people attend in their capacity as county commissioners or as precinct committee people? There needs to be, in my opinion, a modest inquiry into at least facts of a basic nature, a minimal inquiry into whether or not there's reason to believe that a violation of the provisions of the act have occurred. It's up to the prosecutor to manage that test, but the test does exist in that same statute that makes reference mandatory, and if there's no reason to believe, then under that same statute, there's no mandatory duty. Moving down to D, I note that, and I think we've had an example of it in the exchange today between myself and counsel, that on significant or novel questions such as this was, and certainly the participation in a Republican Central Committee meeting by members of the board as precinct committee people to fill a vacancy in the county is a significant rarity, although there are many county commissioners, I'm sure, who sit on their Republican Central Committees or their Democrat Central Committees, both of which can make these vacancy recommendations. Those kind of vacancies don't occur very often, so it was here a novel question, and the board did informally, orally request advice on that prior to the meeting. But what I'm suggesting here is that on novel questions with importance and impact, such as statutory duties, the best practice would be to seek in advance a written guideline by the prosecutor's office. It can be formal or informal. It can be a letter form. It can be lengthy with citations and attachment of cases or whatever is appropriate. But it would be a useful exercise for the board and a useful exercise for the prosecutor's office to issue written requests and written letters back and forth on issues like this in advance of something arising. That then precludes institutional misrecollection. Suggested below, it makes sure that there's consistency within the prosecutor's office, that each prosecutor theoretically knows or has a reference point for what was said by some other prosecutor. I'm suggesting, frankly, that as I note in this, that it's a good practice, though again, requires coordination inside the prosecutor's office, to have both the deputy who is rendering that opinion and the prosecutor himself or herself sign off on that opinion so it is clear that it is the official position of the office and it is clear that whomever the opining attorney is has the full authority of the office to issue the statement that is of issue to the county commissioners. I'm suggesting, too, that if these exchanges are in writing, then there's almost at least a reduced likelihood that misinterpretations will be had by the entity or the person who is seeking the advice. These kinds of things also allowed, just as I was afforded the opportunity to do, and Mr. Erickson was not afforded the opportunity to do in the exchange of his oral opinion, though correct, to consult the Attorney General's office, to consult other prosecutors' offices. So the putting of these questions in writing allows for the careful and deliberate consultation by the attorney of relevant authorities and even prior opinions if the office has issued some. And frankly, by engaging in this activity, it cements the attorney-client relationship. You are a client asking for advice. The attorney is on notice and engaged that it is important and appreciated and professionally necessary for the delivery of that advice, and the attorney-client privilege and the attorney-client relationship in all of their formal understandings are invoked. And my final point of significance here, E at the bottom of page 4, is what has happened here in this circumstance is the attorney-client relationship has been damaged, impaired, or threatened, and needs to be reconstituted and restructured. The problem that was occasioned by this exchange of correspondence without notice to the board, as the client of the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office, is that arguably a conflict of interest arose between the Prosecutor's Office and the Board of County Commissioners. In consultation with Idaho State Bar Council and reviewing the Idaho Code of Professional Responsibility, a bar council directs me to the most applicable rule, which is 1.7 conflict of interest current clients. Now, there's no rule that says exactly what happens under the open meeting law. There's no rule that says how prosecutors and their clients, any of their county clients, must handle every situation. But what happened here was that from the perception of the board, certainly, and I think fairly from the perception of the county prosecutor's office, a conflict of interest potentially arose between the board and the prosecutor's office. And the rules say, and bar counsel directed me to the rule that says, if a concurrent conflict of interest, that is a problem where the prosecutor is not in complete alignment with the interests of his client, and we certainly have that here, and it's concurrent, namely that the ongoing duty of the prosecutor is to, on a daily basis, deliver advice on all kinds of topics to the commission, then there is potentially a, quote, significant risk that the representation of the client will be materially limited in some particular. And those kinds of things can be dealt with in part. And remember, the prosecutor's office has got an ongoing and everyday duty all the way across the board to represent this commission. Those kinds of conflicts, contained as this was in terms of an open meeting law violation and a mandatory reference to another prosecutor, those things can be dealt with, and that doesn't automatically mean that you have to disqualify either the client or the attorney from all interaction with each other. They can be dealt with if the affected client gives informed consent, either in writing or at least knows what's going on. So my effort here in suggesting that the board remain committed to open meeting law compliance, that the prosecutor remain committed to his mandatory duty to refer violations out under any serious complaint to the Open Meetings Act, that the board and the prosecutor have appropriate dialogue to make sure there's a reason to believe that a violation has been committed, and that we use devices like a request for written opinions in writing, and that we communicate back and forth if some kind of concurrent conflict of interest appears to emerge, so that informed consent as to all of the issues that are facing the county, or all of the issues but one that are facing the county, continue to be faithfully represented with confidence from the commission by the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office. This is, I believe, an instructive episode, and I appreciate and believe that hopefully this entire interaction can indeed be used to build, as the commissioner says, better and more constructive working partnership between the two offices. It's in that light that I undertook this mission. I'm hopeful my efforts have been useful to both offices.
Mr. Leroy, you have
had contacted.
Just a minute. You didn't address the chair.
I apologize, sir. May I please speak to Mr. Leroy?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Leroy, you mentioned that you had contacted some other county prosecutor's offices. Would you mind telling me which ones?
You and I might have that dialogue personally or privately, but okay. I'd prefer not to on the record.
Okay. Would you be willing to speak with Prosecutor Taylor about it at some
Pardon
point?
Pardon me?
Would you be willing to speak with Prosecutor Taylor about it
oh,
at
absolutely.
Some point?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
And I would appreciate the opportunity to go over my my findings and my recommendations with the elected prosecutor.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think it is unreasonable and intellectually dishonest to suggest that the advice that we sought on January 30th, I believe, was not in reference to having any issue with us attending in our capacity as precinct committeemen in relation to open meeting laws. That kind of high-level mental gymnastics has significantly altered my trust in the majority of the PA's office, and I'm not exactly sure what to do with it at this point. But I will take Mr. Leroy's advice and get everything in writing going forward.
Chairman?
Yes.
I will say this again as the longest serving member on this board. It is my desire to be collegial, collaborative. I walked into an environment that was not that in 2022. I will say that in reference to PA Klempel's comments about Mr. Leroy's outside counsel and the cost thereof, then Chief Civil Deputy Lougheed stated on the record that the county, in its relentless witch hunt to find things that is the same disingenuous kind of nonsense. I believe the term that Mr. Leroy used was patently absurd, that the cost for that was in approaching $100,000. So I would submit that if we want fiscal responsibility, and this board does, that we have to have people, as you've indicated, start working together. That's what we're here for, is to work for the taxpayer. I am completely fatigued by, as Commissioner Brooks has said, the mental gymnastics in trying to figure out how to work with this kind of adversarial legal counsel. I can tell you that in my attempt to gain an understanding of Idaho state statute in fulfilling my role, I did contact at select times members of the Ada County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. I've built relationships with that at a not a deep level, but I did not find that they were adversarial. They were not bullying. They were not mobbing. That climate is so wrong on so many levels. And I have been fairly stoic in just trying to come to work and do my job. But I will state for the record, this has been a very difficult journey with people that have what they perceive to be enough political power to bully the chief executive authority of this county and get away with it. And I want to work with people, but I will not capitulate to bullies because it is bad governance. And when we do not understand our role by statute, and when Mr. Taylor, in a meeting with him, one of the first times as a commissioner-elect, asked me what part of my statutory duties he could have, my answer was none, sir. So I am stating for the record, this commissioner has done my very best to fulfill my oath of office and my duties. And to take the kind of beating that I've taken, I don't think there's many people that would. I'm standing here today. I'm proud to be an elected official of Kenyon County. My desire is to work collaboratively the relationships with the sheriff's office, the clerk, the treasurer, the assessor. Those relationships, while they may not be perfect, they are intact. There is one office that is adamant in holding this commission at arm's length and either failing to interpret and advise in efforts in ways that create trust. This board has the same feeling. I didn't manufacture it. The frustration that's there from three people that simply want to go to work and be good stewards of Canyon County resources. I think there needs to be an evaluation of who's here to work. I'm here to work. My teammates are here to work.
Commissioner Van Veek, a point of clarification, if you would be so kind. The $100K amount you alluded to was in past fiscal years, correct?
That is a true statement.
Thank you.
It is on the record.
Well, we had today's meeting in light of, even though P.A. Taylor feels that this item was done, and it is done in his office, but it was an accusation against this office. And the door swings both directions. And I would offer that I am also willing to go up and sit down with him. But if you attack my integrity and you aren't man enough to talk to me about it, I'm frustrated, because that is not how we build good government. That's not how we stay efficient as a county and nine elected officials. And I think we can do better. I hope that we can do better. I would say on the record, I will try to do whatever is my responsibility to do better. But I would say that if you're willing to reach out and try to get me fined and put in jail, why aren't you willing to reach out and at least try to educate me or shepherd me to keep this county out of problems? I would be a willing student to not get this county into trouble. And the major fruit of the allegation would have been to vacate the clerk and all of his recordings and actions during that period of time. And that would have put us in the news, and it would have caused a lot of harm. Yes?
You mentioned trying to put you in jail.
Well, I'm just referring to the Idaho open meetings violation. I don't know how far it would have gone.
Not criminal at all. So there's no risk of jail under that. Just wanted to clarify that.
You know, the jail thing is insignificant for this commissioner. It's the attack of my integrity.
Amen.
That's the issue. And so I have decades as a public servant. I get the Idaho open meetings goal. And I would not knowingly try to skirt around it. So I just look forward to trying to work together and not be adversarial.
Jeremy, can I make hopefully a last comment?
Sure.
It has not been a secret to this board that the current prosecutor and the former commissioner, who avowed the day after the 2022 primary to make citizens and taxpayers pay for not returning her to office. She has proven to be difficult and an obstacle at every turn for the success of good governance and this the functional workings and the operations and the discharge of duties by this office. So people, and if they are listening, who are blissfully ignorant and uninformed about the necessity for outside legal counsel, I think there is no better example than what we're passing through and the other four issues that we had because of the lack of trust that exists between the prosecutor and the board's office. I'm honored that we have someone of Mr. Leroy's caliber to be here and represent. He is a friend, he is a counselor, he is nationally recognized for his political diplomacy, he is an icon in Idaho politics. He is someone that I am proud to call legal counsel today. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your efforts and your professionalism and providing instruction and guidance to help navigate. I know that you're no stranger to this. You've served under five different presidents, and your legacy and your leadership legally is well respected. And for that, thank you.
Point of clarification, if I might, Commissioner Van Beek, you said lack of trust was our motivation for seeking outside counsel. Would you concur that a more correct statement would be our awareness of the conflict of interest between the PA and the subject matter that the board was having to deal with?
Thank you, Chairman. That's an accurate correction.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take just a moment to address the actual correspondence between our PA and the Bonner County PA.
Okay.
That, as Mr. Leroy alluded to, it was largely copy and paste. I don't know which one I'm more disappointed in. Our PA for not discussing the matter with us first before firing off this letter, or the Bonner County PA for literally copying and pasting probably at least two-thirds of the document, including a narrative in instances where our chief operating officer is discussed, quote, habitually and freely interjects and speaks on behalf of the board on the record during the meetings. So in my opinion, in a letter such as this, beyond the fact that it shouldn't have been sent in the first place without discussing with us, our PA feels free to send that kind of commentary to another outside PA. But then the absolute laziness of another PA to include that in their report back to our PA. I'm blown away that that kind of thing happens in this state, especially from a PA that has apparently been well-liked and respected enough to be reelected four times up north. I'm quite frustrated with that. And the overall tone, again, I'm still at the same point I was a couple of days ago. I feel targeted by my own counsel. Did not come and talk to us beforehand. Much of this could have been ironed out before. And the more I think about the PA's office trying to walk back, giving us counsel that it was all right for us to attend that meeting, February 6th, when Chief Erickson came down with a transcript of Commissioner Van Beek's language from the February 2nd meeting, at no point was there a discussion about curing a violation that we attended the meeting. It was simply based upon the perception of the use of the word we, that we had engaged in some sort of conversation off the record when it needed to be on the record. It is wholly misrepresentative of the actual facts to sit here and try to say that his advice was not based upon a potential open meeting violation. And I stand by my previous comment. My trust is severely damaged.
Chairman, having attended that meeting, none of the commissioners sat together. P.A. Taylor is an elected precinct committeeman who was not present at that meeting either and fails regularly to attend any of those meetings. So I didn't talk to my fellow commissioners after that meeting. I left with my husband, who is an elected precinct committeeman. We came back, meaning the board returned to work after a 10 or how many ever day, and we had business to conduct. This is typical, as Commissioner Brooks has said, of the intentional targeting and the misrepresentation or twisting of information for a gotcha moment. It is disappointing. And how do you conduct business when the people representing or supposed to be representing you are always on that mode?
Well, we have some challenges before us. We owe it to the voter. We owe it to the taxpayer. We owe it to our citizens to do the best we can possibly do during difficult situations.
Agreed.
And I can speak for all three of us. Is that true? That we will do our best that we can possibly do?
Yes.
Okay. For the audio record, Chairman or Commissioner Brooks was shaking his head in the affirmative, so we don't want to lose that in this medium. Okay, well, we hope that this can be a learning experience and we can go forward from here and we can all do better. Is there anything else that we want to do?
Chairman, I didn't know if our council wanted to finish.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I would say that I greatly appreciated the excessive compliments that Ms. Van Beek paid me, but if this is to be a credible meeting, you should strike those from the record. They were excessive indeed.
Yes, excessive. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. If there is anything else,
yes,
then let's consider this meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.